This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. By now, President-elect Trump's accusation of massive voter fraud in New Hampshire has been widely rejected by state elections officials, but the issue itself of the potential for fraud has gained a lot of attention in recent years. The debate over whether New Hampshire's election laws are tight enough to ensure only those Granite Staters eligible to vote are allowed to cast ballots. And so Governor-elect Sununu says reform in this area will be a top priority for him. Also, several voting-related bills are in the works for the next legislature. Today in The Exchange, do our election laws need to change, or is the system fine the way it is? Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have two guests in studio. Both of them are lawyers who've worked with their respective parties on Election Day to look into allegations of voting irregularities. Brian Gould is here. He's an attorney with Cleveland, Waters & Bass. He's former vice chair of the New Hampshire GOP. And Brian, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you, Laura. Good to be here.
Also with us, Paul Toomey. He served as legal counsel to House Democrats and as state legal counsel for several Democratic presidential campaigns. And Paul, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, gentlemen, I'll turn to you first. I think, Brian, Dartmouth College researchers have looked into this. They released a study just recently after the president-elect made his charges. According to the Dartmouth researchers, they found no evidence of widespread fraud in the three states highlighted by Mr. Trump, including New Hampshire. But they also say many Americans appear to believe that voter fraud is common, and yet academic research implies that it is, quoting them now, very, very rare. To you first, Brian Gould, do you agree that it's very, very rare?
I think it is in New Hampshire. I can't speak for those other states, but I think in New Hampshire it is rare based on my experience, particularly in this last election. I spent the entire day, as did Paul, I think, taking calls from people in the polling places. And their responsibility was to make us aware of any irregularities. We saw nothing systemic throughout the day. There were episodes where, you know, there was ground for concern, but nothing systemic.
Well, and I want to ask you in a minute about what did come up that was grounds for concern. But how about you, Paul Toomey? Very, very rare. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can only think of maybe a handful, under five cases of voter fraud ever in the state of New Hampshire. And I think only one of them involved voter impersonation, somebody pretending to be somebody else. So I think it's almost non-existent.
So how about the second part of what the Dartmouth researchers say, Paul? Many Americans appear to believe voter fraud is common. So why the disconnect there?
Well, we've had a 15-year period, and I hate to immediately go partisan, but I think the Republican Party has for the last 15 years been saying there's voter fraud, and when you repeat something over and over again, certainly a certain number of people are going to come to believe it. I think that's one of the problems. I think we do have some problems in terms of the terminology we use around voting, around residence and domicile and inhabitant. We can get to that later and go into the weeds, but I think that does cause some of the confusion too.
What do you think, Brian, that Republicans have put this message out and now people are starting to believe it?
Well, I think it's a little more nuanced than that, in that the concern that Republicans that I talk to have is about the opportunity for fraud, not actual episodes of fraud. And I think that the way that New Hampshire law is written makes it possible for someone to commit fraud because of how easily someone can register to vote on the day of the election.
Well, and in fact, Governor-elect Chris Sununu talked about this in a recent interview with NHPR's Morning Edition team. Let's hear what he said.
I'm not saying that that people are doing things illegally, but the system allows for so much flexibility in gray area in terms of who's a resident, who's not, how long have you been here, same-day voter, what are the checks and balances. It's just about getting that into place. So I know the Democrats like to say, oh, it's about fraud. It's not necessarily about fraud. It's about just having a system that I think right now is just too loose.
Do you agree with that, Brian Gould? It's just too loose now.
I don't know that I think that it's necessarily too loose, except in terms of what constitutes domicile under New Hampshire law.
That's the biggest problem?
I think it is, because literally someone can walk into a polling place, have in his or her mind at the time that he or she wants to be or intends to live in that town, can vote and then walk out the door and change his or her mind. And that is not illegal under New Hampshire law. And you can see how that could be abused.
This seems to come up a lot, Paul, the idea that domicile is just too loosey-goosey a term, that we should have something easier to understand and easier to enforce, and that's residency. What do you think?
Well, I think it's helpful to step back a little bit and historically look at what terms have been used. The right to vote in New Hampshire is Part 1, Article 11, and that uses two terms, inhabitant and then domicile, both within the same article talking about what it is that gives you the right to vote. We've had layered over that statutory definitions of residence, now resident. Now, for about 200 years, those three words meant exactly the same. The courts used them interchangeably, statutes used them interchangeably, and there was no difference. In the 70s or the 60s, when we got the one person, one vote ruling, and after 1971, when the 26th Amendment came in, giving people under 18 the right to vote, the courts also said that you can't have one factor in your requirements for voting, and that's an intent to stay indefinitely, which sort of touches on what Brian just said. And the leading case was the case Neuberger versus Peterson from New Hampshire, but it was all over the United States. There were probably 40, 50 federal cases that say you can't make somebody intend to stay indefinitely. Well, that was built into our statutory definition of resident. So instead of changing that definition, what we did is started using domicile instead of resident for voting. Our definition of domicile is the same as resident in just about every other state, but we use a different word, and that causes a whole lot of confusion, I think.
So should it be changed? What do you think?
I think there's a very easy way to change it. You simply say that resident is just what we have it for every other purpose, and there's like 600 different purposes under the statutes. We define resident different ways, except you say for voting it shall not include that intent to stay indefinitely. That would be about a 6 or 7 word change to the definition of residency, and it would end all this confusion about domicile and residency.
Well, former Massachusetts Senator and New Hampshire Senate candidate Scott Brown caused some waves talking about this issue, alleging that, you know, busloads of people came up from Massachusetts and cast ballots in New Hampshire's election. Here he is talking about this issue on Boston Herald Radio's morning meeting. This is about a week ago.
They basically go up. They don't have an ID. They drive up. They say, you know, walk in and say, I want to vote. They say, oh, have you voted? No. Well, are you domiciled here? Well, yes. And do you have any ID? And she's like, don't. I'm sorry. Okay, well, here, fill out this affidavit. Well, domicile means you stayed there the night before, and you have the intent to live there in the future. In reality, they don't.
So is that right, Brian Gould? Domicile means you stayed there the night before?
Theoretically, yes, and that's where Senator Brown's coming from, is that it is possible for someone to walk in, sign an affidavit, no ID. The Secretary of State and the Attorney General's office have indicated that election officials can't even require someone to go back to the car to get ID. They have to give them the opportunity to simply sign an affidavit of domicile. And that person is then allowed to vote. Now, I saw no evidence of busloads coming up and voting. That doesn't mean it didn't happen, but I didn't see it, and it wasn't reported to us. But it is a recurrent theme, particularly in the border communities. We get that concern expressed frequently by the people who are out there in the polls keeping an eye on things. But I've not seen it substantiated. The closest that we've come is 2 years ago when Bill Gardner sent out postcards to the same-day registrants, and a lot of them came back undeliverable. And that raised a legitimate concern that that some people were taking advantage of the liberality of our same-day registration procedures.
So you haven't seen horrible misuse, but the concern is there that it could happen because this definition of domicile is so easy.
Yes, and, you know, let's remember, Paul and I just did a series of recounts where where the outcome of elections turned on 6 votes, 5 votes. You know, it's unlikely in a presidential race that it's going to be that close. But if one person can cancel out my vote in a local race, that's a very significant intrusion on my right to vote.
Do you want to jump in, Paul?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, first of all, it's somewhat ironic that Scott Brown says anything on this subject, since he, as far as I know, he's the only person who ever publicly called on people to come from other states and vote for him. I think he did so perhaps tongue-in-cheek. But
I think he was joking.
I think he was, too. But he's, nonetheless, he went on a radio station that's broadcast in a multi-state region and said, well, maybe people should come from Vermont, Massachusetts, and vote for me. No, nobody else has ever made that joke. So it's ironic that we'd even listen to him about this. If there were any type of systemic groups of people coming into the state to vote, you would see some evidence of it somewhere. The reason you don't see any evidence is it doesn't make any sense to do that. I mean, people aren't going to spend hours and hours standing in line, driving up here to change one vote. It just doesn't happen. There's no motive to do it. In regards to the postcards, the Attorney General's office has been investigating these return postcards for, I think, 6 or 7 years. They've gone through thousands and thousands of them. They're never going to catch up because there's just basically too many. They haven't found a single case of somebody that's the postcard was returned because of no forwarding address that wasn't actually somebody who had been here legally. And they issue reports every year. They're right online. You can go look at them. There isn't a single case of somebody voting illegally.
Well, a couple more questions for you, gentlemen. And then I've got some emails and Facebook comments that have come in, so we'll go to those as well. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us as well. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. There's been a lot of talk at the State House about tightening up New Hampshire's voting laws. That's what we're looking at today in the exchange. And let's get your opinion. Do you think New Hampshire's voting system is too lax, too tight? Just about right. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And a couple of Facebook comments came in before the show. I want to share them with you. And Ken says, when the Republicans can provide some actual proof that fraud has happened, then we can start talking about restricting people. Until then, Ken says, we should be making it easier for citizens to exercise their rights, not the reverse. Ken also says, the fact is voter rolls are public records. If people were voting in multiple places or if dead people were voting, a popular myth, then we should be able to produce examples, but they can't. What do you think, Brian Gould?
Well, it's one of those things that's difficult to prove, although I agree with the premise of his comment, which is that absent proof of fraud, there is no justification for changing voter laws in a way that restricts the ability to register and to vote. I think maybe the way to deal with this is on the back end, which is to deal with it from an enforcement standpoint. If you're going to have same-day registration, that means that you have to have rigorous enforcement after the election. It's not going to change the outcome of the election, but it could serve as a disincentive to those who might take advantage of New Hampshire's very lax requirements in terms of same-day registration.
Well, and the question then comes up. The Attorney General's office has said recently, look, if you want us to investigate all this, we don't have the money. We've got a state rep coming on in a couple minutes, so we'll ask him that question, because I know you guys aren't in charge of the state budget. So, do you all want to address that as well, Paul?
Yes, in two parts. First of all, I agree with the person who wrote in that we should be making it easier to vote. We have a lot of problems with our election system. I don't think vote fraud is one of it, but the ability of voters to get to the polls and vote easily is a problem that I think we need to address. And the ability of the local election officials to process the voters in an efficient manner. And they're having an extremely difficult time finding people to take the job. And part of it is because we've overloaded that whole system with a number of things that really just take up time and energy. It just makes it harder and harder for people to vote. And people can't stand in line for 2 hours in some places where they have to.
Does that happen in New Hampshire? I see pictures from other states, but...
Sure, sure. I mean, it happens in limited places. It doesn't happen everywhere. I mean, perhaps the classic example is it was more of a traffic problem in Merrimack in the primary where people were sitting for hours and hours. But we have places in Durham every year. There's long lines. And Durham is one of the most efficiently run polling places in the state. In Manchester, there are long lines every single year. Nashua, there are long lines every single year. Plymouth, there are long lines. So it's not everywhere. Some of the larger towns in Rockingham County that are predominantly Republican towns, they are also facing longer and longer lines.
All right.
Not everybody can stand in line. A person who has children at home or a job to get to can't do it.
Sure. Okay. Well, I guess I'm blissfully ignorant because in Concord, I have never, every 2 years I vote and I have never faced a line more than 2 minutes.
It depends on where you live.
Sure.
I live in Chichester. The line's never more than 3 nanoseconds long. But, you know, if you live in an inner city ward, it's difficult. I mean, they don't have the resources, and the parking's difficult. Everything's difficult.
Do we have any inner city wards here, Paul?
Well, yes.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. Lots of people who want to jump in our conversation. So we welcome your questions, comments, concerns. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Jillian's joining us from Hudson. Hi, Jillian. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to share that, you know, I live in Hudson, which is a border town with Massachusetts. I've been living here for 6 years, and, you know, I've never seen any evidence of folks coming up over the border. And especially, I think it's kind of ironic that we've heard all these claims from Governor-elect Nunu and others that there are Democrats coming over the border when, you know, our town went for Trump. We've had all 11 of our state reps are Republicans and will be when they're sworn in for the next time, too. So it just seems kind of silly to have all these claims of fraud when clearly, you know, it's not going very well if they're trying to do it. And also, I kind of wanted to just ask Paul, you know, who are folks who would be most affected by getting rid of same-day voter registration? I'm thinking, you know, folks who move a lot, who might not have had time to register a month before the election. But I'm just curious who else might be affected by that proposed policy change by Governor-elect Sununu.
Jillian, thank you very much. And we haven't touched on that yet, but we can and should. And that's the question that's circulating, Paul Toomey, of whether New Hampshire should get rid of its same-day registration. So go ahead, Jillian asked you, who would be affected by that?
Okay, well, first of all, people that just moved to the state and you know, they could be any kind of people that just move in. They would definitely be affected. Those are people you could move in here with your entire family and have a job you would intend to spend the rest of your life. And if you did it under the Republican proposals in the last 30 days, you'd lose your right to vote. Happily, the U.S. Supreme Court has said that that's not an outcome that's permissible. For the rest, though, it's people that skew poor because they tend to be registered less frequently. They tend to vote less frequently. They tend to vote only in every other election as opposed to higher income people who tend to vote more often every election so they don't drop off the election rolls. They tend to be working class people who have, you know, some sort of difficulties that interfere with them getting down to register. When you make it really hard to register, you require two totally separate trips. That makes it far less likely that people are going to register to vote. If you don't allow same-day registration and at the same time you don't allow for easy registration the rest of the year, you're just making it harder for certain groups to vote.
All right. Well, Jillian, thank you for the call. And coming up, a lot more to talk about on this debate over tightening New Hampshire's voting laws. We'll also check in with a Republican state lawmaker who has submitted a couple bills addressing the so-called domicile issue. All that coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire voting laws. Too lax, too tight, or just right? Let us know what you think. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With us in studio, two lawyers who've worked with their respective parties on Election Day to look into allegations of voting irregularities. They are Brian Gould. He's an attorney and also former vice chair of the New Hampshire GOP. And Paul Toomey. He served as legal counsel to House Democrats. Joining us now on the phone is David Bates. He's a Republican state representative from Windham. He submitted more than 12 bills addressing voting for this upcoming session. And Representative Bates, good to have you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for having me again.
Well, we won't go through all the bills, but I do wonder, Representative Bates, which part of the voting system do you think is most problematic? If you could just fix one thing in your opinion, what would it be?
Well, as you can tell from the number of bills I have, and it's actually quite a bit more than a dozen, there's lots of areas that need to be fixed. We haven't had a recodification of New Hampshire election laws in over 35 years, and since that time, lots of things have changed, including the Help America Vote Act, the implementation of the statewide voter registration database, and just a lot of procedural things are different. And I don't know anybody who is familiar with New Hampshire election laws that don't think that they are really in need of much change. So I have a lot of different bills to address lots of different things. But one of the overriding factors that is most urgent is what you've been talking about, the clarification of what a valid claim of domicile is. And another one that is very important to me is the current policy that is actually a result of the ambiguities in our laws and also court decisions, fairly recent court decisions a year and a half ago. The current policy in New Hampshire is that you don't have to be a resident of the state in order to vote here. And I think that's absolutely absurd. So one of my bills, actually a couple of them address that. It will make it an explicit requirement that you must be a resident of New Hampshire in order to vote here.
And how do you define resident?
Well, that's actually one of the bills that I have in. And Paul did a fine job of explaining the semantics of, in the historical context, of the difference between resident, domicile, and habitant. And as he correctly pointed out, something that I haven't heard many Democrats admit, that at least at one point in our history, these were all essentially interchangeable, synonymous terms. And in recent years, there's been a deliberate effort to bifurcate these concepts. I'm trying to bring it back together and harmonize. And it's actually a fairly easy thing to do. It's even easier than the proposal that Paul suggested. And in terms of correcting it, all we need to do to bring it in alignment with the federal court decision in Neuberger versus Peterson is remove three words from our current definition of resident. And all we need to do is take out the phrase that requires a person to have an indefinite intention to remain in the state.
That's the problematic language. So resident would be someone who proves that they have an address and that they actually live here, not just intend to stay here?
Well, the problem is much easier to define than to solve, because there's two elements of what constitutes a valid domicile. The first one is very simple, and that is there has to be a physical presence. The second part is where it gets dicey, and that is it has to do with what the person's intent is. There needs to be intent to designate that place as their primary place of habitation and a place to which they return upon a temporary absence and so on and so forth. So you can't get away from the fact that a person's intent is an essential element of what constitutes domicile, and that gets very difficult to put into statute, because there's no way for us to get inside somebody else's mind and know if they're being truthful when they say what their intent is in terms of establishing New Hampshire as their home or not.
So would you create a 30-day residency requirement, Representative Bates, or a 10-day? Or I know the legislature went around and around on this last time, and ultimately those efforts were, I believe, vetoed by Governor Hassan. So what would you specifically do to clear this up?
Well, I did not support those efforts the last 2 years, and I'm still looking at it to see if there is a way to implement that, and that will survive the inevitable challenge that will come. There's definitely some potential difficulties with the privileges and immunity clause of Article 4 of the Constitution, and also the 14th Amendment and equal protection. And there's lots of valid concerns that can be raised about that. And I don't want to waste effort trying to push through legislation that is inevitably or has a chance of being struck down in court. I'm looking at, rather than making sweeping changes and total wholesale change of our voting system, to make adjustments to our current system and try to, again, bring clarity and not just to the issue of what a person's domicile is, but as Brian mentioned earlier, and he really hit the nail on the head, is we need to do better in terms of enforcement.
Yeah, can I ask you about that, Representative Bates? Because the AG's office has been saying it doesn't have enough resources to follow up on current complaints of election problems, and sort of hinting that if the legislature is going to pass more requirements or restrictions, it would be even harder to do so. Do your bills or any other bills that you're aware of have money attached to help the AG follow up on what the legislature wants it to follow up on?
Okay, well, you know, there's always a temptation to throw money at problems to try to solve them, and that seems to be the typical way government works. Certainly not a Republican way to address things, and it's not the way that I'm looking at trying to address this issue. I had a bill in last year that I actually resubmitted, and it is to completely change the method for verifying people who sign affidavits when voting without showing proper documentation of their qualifications, either photo ID or domicile or whatever the case may be. So I have a piece of legislation that actually has the support, or at least last year had the support of the Attorney General's office, the HAVA office, the Secretary of State, and I'm hopeful that this is going to pass this time and completely change the system that is currently in place, which is an absolute abysmal failure. I don't know anybody who thinks that the current process for verifying affidavits is working. It's a complete failure, and it needs to change.
Another question for you, Representative Bates. This has gotten a lot of press. Governor Lex Sununu's statement that he'd like to look at getting rid of same-day voter registration that we have here in New Hampshire. How do you feel about that proposal?
Well, I think the Governor Lex Sununu is aware that there is need for making changes, and you and your guests have done a fine job kind of highlighting what the problems are. Personally, I don't believe eliminating same-day registration is the solution to that, and I would be a strong opponent to doing that, because it's the only thing that is keeping us exempt from the National Voter Registration Act, the federal law that is more commonly known as Motor Voter, that brings with it a whole host of not just expenses, it's several million dollars to implement this on a statewide level, but also lots of undesirable things, additional problems, and it would not solve, I don't believe it would solve the concerns that are being talked about here this morning. I think it would actually introduce even more problems, and so I would not be supporting that, and would be encouraging the governor and all those concerned to focus on more, again, rather than a major overhaul of the system, more specific changes to kind of fix what we're doing now and make it more clear what a person needs to show to substantiate their qualifications to vote, checking up after the fact, verifying affidavits of people who don't produce those documents when they go to vote on Election Day, and again, making it explicitly clear that you have to be a resident of the state in order to vote here.
One last question for you, Representative Bates, and I think once the legislature's in full swing, we'll have to have you back to talk more about this. But here's a Facebook comment I got before the show from Keith, who says, there is no proof of voter fraud, and with the many other serious challenges facing our state, the opioid crisis, Keith says, crumbling infrastructure, education funding, attracting businesses to our state, the New Hampshire GOP chooses to focus on this, Keith asks, and I wonder how you would respond to him.
Well, that's a typical Democrat line, and I can tell you from firsthand experience, because I'm a supervisor of the checklist here in my town of Windham. I'm one of those that is responsible for reviewing and approving or rejecting voter registration applications, both prior to and on the day of the election. And in every year, in every, well, maybe not every election, but certainly every year, we find examples of people attempting to vote who are not qualified to vote. We have I don't know the exact number, but multiple examples of people attempting to vote fraudulently here in what I think a lot of people might suspect is one of the least likely places, you know, the quaint little town of Windham. And we have multiple examples of fraud here. In fact, the most recent examples that have been prosecuted in the state, two examples, somebody voting in two places and another person who, excuse me, who technically did commit voter impersonation that is claimed never happens. Both of those examples happened in Windham, and they were successfully prosecuted by the Attorney General with, because of complaints we filed. And again, we'll be filing a number more, probably at least a half a dozen or more complaints just from the recent elections. So voter fraud is real. I speak of it not in hypotheticals or anecdotally, but by personal experience. I see it, and we've been able to stop some of it. Others, we find out after the fact that somebody, you know, just shouldn't have been allowed to vote, and they were able to.
Well,
so
Representative Bates,
yeah.
I have to let you go. I do apologize. And again, we'll check back in with you once the legislature is up and running. Thank you for being with us.
I look forward to it.
All right. Bye-bye. That's David Bates, Republican representative from Windham. And as we heard, he has submitted more than a dozen bills addressing voting for this upcoming session. A lot of emails and calls for both of you gentlemen. But I do wonder what you think, Paul Toomey, about his statement that, look, he's in Windham, right on the border. He sees it. He sees people trying to vote twice and so forth.
As I said earlier, there have only been under five prosecutions for voter fraud. And I'm only familiar with one of the two he referenced there. It's still under five in the whole state. I think that he says he refers lots of them. Apparently, most of the ones he refers are found to have no basis by the Attorney General's office because they're not prosecuted. But again, without the actual cases in front of me, I couldn't tell you. I would say that I agree with Representative Bates that the whole election code needs to be redone. It was done patchwork over years and years, and you've got conflicting provisions that actually make no sense in any known language in the world. And we really ought to take a step back and have some sort of a commission look at all these things so they make sense and so people can understand them. We've had times where the Secretary of State gives one advice to somebody, the Attorney General gives another advice to a voter, and nobody knows what's really the law. We should step back and have some sort of a commission, a bipartisan commission, make these things work. And I've been talking to Representative Bates about this for years, and we actually agree on most of it.
Well, here's an email from Mary in Manchester who says, I vote in Manchester's Ward 1, and this is what I've seen. Mary says, I stood in line in front of two SNHU students who spoke about how happy they were to vote in a swing state because their home states were not, and they did not know any of the down-ballot candidates, so they were voting for the party. This year, Mary says, I was at Webster School for less than 15 minutes, and I saw two groups of well-dressed young adults, groups, perhaps 30-ish, helping each other complete same-day registration forms. None did anything illegal, Mary says, because our laws are so lax. But she says it was fraud, untrue, wrong, rigged. So that's the concern, especially, Brian, about students and them saying, you know, it's more fun to vote in New Hampshire because we're a swing state and I'm from Massachusetts, and that's a blue state, and my vote's not going to count as much there.
Right, and I think that goes to Paul's earlier point that he said there was no motive for people to vote in New Hampshire, but because New Hampshire is a swing state, there is a motive to do that. Now, I can't speak to what this person has observed. It is not inconsistent with the kinds of reports that we get on Election Day. But when those are investigated, at least this time around, we found that there was no basis for them. And to say that busloads of kids are coming in and getting registered, I have no doubt that college students prefer to vote here because it is a swing state. But under our law, they can.
Because they're domiciled
here
for 9 months anyway.
Well, no, they don't have to be domiciled here. They could simply decide on Monday afternoon that they, you know, that they intend to live in New Hampshire. And then after they vote, they can change their mind, just like they can register as a Republican in a primary and walk out and on the way out change back to undeclared. It's such a wifty standard that it begs to be exploited.
I like that word, wifty. Well, here's a tweet, and I want to share this with you, and I can see you want to jump in there, Paul. Cole tweets, as a college student, I believe in same-day registration for students who forgot to request an absentee ballot. Now, Brian, you would say those students who forgot to request an absentee ballot to vote in their home states should not be allowed to vote in New Hampshire.
Well, it's pretty hard to argue that you're domiciled if the only reason you're registering on the same day is because you forgot to vote in your home state.
Go ahead, Paul.
Students have the right to vote either in the state that they lived in before they came to school or in the state they go to school. That's been decided, again, for 45 years. Dunn versus Bloomstein, the United States Supreme Court decided it. 40 federal courts decided it. But they're not unique. Everybody's concerned about students. Military recruiters have the same rights. They can come here for even shorter period than the students, for 2 years or 1 year tour of duty, and they can choose to vote here or vote in their home states. People can come to work for big corporations in Nashua for short periods of time, again, much shorter than the students, and they can either maintain their domicile because they intend to go back to where they came from, or they can vote here while they're living and working here. Students are no different than any of those other categories. They have the and snowbirds. Snowbirds can have residences in Florida and New Hampshire. They can choose which one of them to center their civic life in and which one of them to vote in. We don't question the motives of any of them and say, oh, that military recruiter, he wanted to vote for Donald Trump in a swing state, because they have the right to make those choices under the law.
And so why all the focus on students? Because that's what comes up most often.
That brings up the T-shirt I'm wearing. This is a quotation from former Speaker Bill O'Brien, who said when he proposed all these same bills in 2011, he said, we have to do this because students need to be stopped from basically doing what I did when I was a kid, which is voting liberally. It's how the students vote that's the problem with students. People don't like the fact that they tend to vote disproportionately for Democrats, and so there's an effort to stop them. But nobody's trying to stop military recruiters from voting. Nobody's trying to stop executives at corporations from voting.
Who come into New Hampshire for a month or something.
Well, more than a month. I mean, you know, a year, 2 years, things like that. The students, for the most part, come for 4 years. They're American citizens. They're of the age. They're citizens. Their physical presence is here. And if they decide that this is where they want to make the center of their civic life, they have the right to do that. They don't have any duty to any more than any one of those other categories do to know all the down-ballot races. Lots of people vote without knowing who their representatives are. And in fact, I think UNH indicated at one point that only about 10% of the people in the state could name their state reps.
Brian, what do you think? Are students being unfairly picked on? Paul's pointing out there are all these other groups who are only in the state for a brief period of time and nobody ever talks about them.
Well, I think what it really comes down to is risk, because the way that Republicans look at this is there is the opportunity for fraud. We are not saying that there is widespread voter fraud in New Hampshire. I have to disagree with the president-elect on that. But the opportunity exists.
All right. A lot more of your questions and comments after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at voting laws here in New Hampshire. Are they too tight? Are they too lax? Or are they just about right? As we've been hearing, there will certainly be efforts in the legislature coming up to change New Hampshire's state election laws. We're looking at some of the proposals we might see and getting our guests' thoughts on them. And let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. With us in studio, two attorneys who have worked with their respective parties on Election Day to look into allegations of voting irregularities. Paul Toomey's here, served as legal counsel to House Democrats, and Brian Gould, an attorney with Cleveland Waters and Bass and former vice chair of the New Hampshire GOP. And gentlemen, I want to bring another voice into our conversation now. Wayne Burton is with us, a Democratic state representative from Durham. He serves on the House Election Law Committee. And Representative Burton, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Laura. It's good to be here again.
Well, and you heard some of the concerns heading into the break. We were just talking about concerns seem to rise up every 2 years about students and what their voting rights are and whether they are abusing the privilege of New Hampshire's same-day voting registration system. I wonder what you think.
I think, first of all, I'd like to point out that Scott Brown had a school bus busing students from the Republican Student Club at UNH over to the polls when he ran against Gene Shaheen. And Gene had a small van. So there's a certain hypocrisy in what he said there. I'd also like to point out that your other discussants did not say that not only do you have to sign an affidavit if you don't have an ID now, you get your picture taken. And that's a very good way, I suspect, if there is any fraud, of preventing it. But lastly, I'd like to say for Representative Bates, who is an expert on this, and he is tenacious, I must say, but he pointed out that it's been a while since we have tweaked our laws. But I must also point out that over the 35 years he mentioned, the state of New Hampshire went from 35th in voter turnout to second. That's a record to be extremely proud of under our current laws and our current processes. And that's the primary reason, I believe, that we're still the first in the nation primary.
Because we have such good voter turnout.
To an amazing record of voter turnout. I'd also point out that I called Attorney LeBlanc and asked him why they couldn't clear the backlog of cases in the Attorney General's office. And he said it would cost about $100,000 a year. Plus, when we look at it, we know there's no fraud in there anywhere. There are typographical errors, there's all kinds of things. But I'd also point out that if we wanted to allocate $100,000 on a one-time basis from the HABA funds that Secretary Gardner currently is holding is about $11 million.
What does HABA stand for, Representative Burton?
Helping America Vote Act.
Okay.
When it was passed back in 2000, I think there's about $15 million allocated to New Hampshire, and that hasn't been spent.
Could we talk a little bit, Representative Burton, about domicile? Because that seems to be the big issue that a lot of folks are concerned about. You know, some Republicans have said, look, don't worry about same-day registration, including Representative Bates. But what about that issue of domicile and, you know, that people just have to say they intend to be here, but they could walk out of the polling place and decide their intentions had changed? I wonder if you find that problematic.
No, I don't. Voting in this country, in our Constitution, federally and statewide, makes voting a right and not a privilege. And that is that it's the role of government to facilitate voting, not limit voting. And any laws that limit voting, in the words of Judge Dalianis when she ruled on against the state in that famous case, the Guerra case, is that when she looked at Attorney General LeBlanc and said, what don't you get about free elections? It's the role of government to eliminate barriers between people in the voting booth, not put them up.
So toward that end, yeah, go ahead.
So anyway, domicile is in the Constitution, both as Representative Bates points out, it is really, it's now been settled law in New Hampshire by that court case of exactly what domicile is. And if you read her decision, with a court decision from a year and a half ago, and I was in the courtroom when she gave it, as was Representative Bates. I think that settles the matter, because anything else would eliminate so many people. Think of veterans coming from Iraq, for example, done two tours. They come to UNH. They have no idea where they're going to be indefinitely, but they know where they're going to be for their foreseeable future. They'll be staying at UNH and pursuing their studies. Wouldn't it be a tragedy if those people who had fought and almost given their lives for their country were then disenfranchised when they returned by some kind of a residency law that was too harsh?
So, Representative Burton, as I said, you serve on the House Election Law Committee. We heard from Representative Bates about some of the bills that he'll be submitting. Do you have any bills that you'll be putting forward on this issue of voting and voting reform?
I don't, because it's worked. 70% turnout, no fraud. Why would we want to change a system that's worked so well for New Hampshire? And most of what Representative Bates is proposing would restrict access.
So you're not interested in early voting like they have in some other states? Some people say that's a way
to expand
voting.
I think early voting should be explored. But what I really think should happen is we take that HABA money and use it for what it was for. And I think three suggestions made by our town administrator, as Paul said, Durham has a very good record for administering our election. And Todd Selig is one of the most admired town administrators in the state. Standardized poll hours. I tried that last year. It didn't pass, but it's needed. An innovative grant system for cities and towns to support, to make sure they have the supplies and equipment. That would be important, supporting people with physical impairments. And thirdly, of course, is to have a statewide voter registration system, not a voting system, but a registration system, an e-poll system, so that we could better regulate who is voting. I mean, we have
you can
the
cross-check
town
to town.
Cross-check town to town, sure.
Okay.
Representative Burton, those things could all cost money, but those things could all be paid for with a HABA fund.
And I got to let you go, Representative Burton. So many people who want to jump in our conversation. I really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
That's Wayne Burton, Democratic state rep from Durham, and he serves on the House Election Law Committee. A couple emails to share with you, gentlemen. Here's David in Dover. He says, we moved back to New Hampshire in the fall. We didn't have the right bill or receipt showing both our names to make the normal registration deadline, but got our city water bill in time to show it for same-day registration. So count me in as a fan of same-day registration. Here's one from Margaret in Concord, who says, who signed up and voted on Election Day this year? What were their party affiliations? Do we have a sense of how they voted? Were they domiciled or residents? Either of you, never mind the first parts, but what about that last part? Do we even know who claims residency or domicile when they sign up to register? Do we have a sense of how many people are, you know, saying, I'm Laura Kanoy and I've domiciled in New Hampshire, or I'm Laura Kanoy and I've registered in New Hampshire? Do we know that?
Well, everybody says I'm Laura Kanoy and I'm domiciled because that's what the law requires to vote. If the law required you use the word resident, then they would all say they were residents. It's
you mean in the affidavit?
In the affidavit, yeah. In terms of who does it, I don't know the last election. The last presidential election before this, it was about 10% of the turnout were same-day residents, same-day registrants.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know, sort of how popular is this, how many people are taking,
It's a lot of people.
Taking advantage of the fact that it's there.
You know, if there's a turnout of 800,000 people in a presidential election, it's 80,000 people. That's a lot of people to take away their right to vote for in one fell swoop.
I haven't heard a lot of people saying that they think that this taking away same-day voter registration, I'll turn to you first, Brian, is possible. I mean, I know Governor Lex Nunu's talked about it and others have talked about it, but it seems like in the last couple of days, several people have said, no, this would be really difficult.
I think it would be difficult, particularly for federal elections, because under, as Representative Bates said, the reason that we are exempt from the so-called motor voter law is because we do have same-day registration. If we were to eliminate that for federal races, we would become subject to the motor voter law. So,
which would cost more money because you have to offer it in all sorts of public offices, whether it's motor vehicle registration, libraries maybe. So it would be more costly.
There are mandatory registration sites, DMVs, and public assistance offices. And then there's a list of optional sites, and states have to pick among those optional sites, but they get to choose which ones they want to use. So, yeah, there's a significant administrative burden associated with that.
Do you want to jump in?
Yeah, just I don't think it would be a bad thing if we kept same-day registration, but also allowed for sort of opt-out automatic registration when people have significant interactions with the state, say at motor vehicle. The things you have to prove to get a driver's license are, it's like a Chinese puzzle. You have to get one menu. It's like you have to get one from four different columns. It's really hard to get a driver's license. If you made that become an automatic place where people are then, with the same information they're already giving for their driver's license, getting registered, that would save a lot of the pressure on election officials on election day. It would get people registered. It would increase the turnout in the total number of people who can vote. I don't see any reason not to do that and keep same-day
registration. In addition to.
Right. Right.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Teresa's joining us from Derry. Hi, Teresa. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead, Teresa.
I was wondering, I mean, the representative you just had on the phone, or the gentleman just had a phone, brought it up briefly about electronic voting databases. I know I've moved several times within the state. I moved back to one town, and I was still on the rolls from that town, even though I had previously voted in two other towns that I had lived in. And I have a sibling who lives out of state who is actually still receiving a plethora of flyers from New Hampshire because he's still on the rolls in New Hampshire, even though he's lived in another state for 10-plus years. So, I mean, even just electronic databases within the state, but even sharing it with other states, too, to see who's registered where.
Yeah, okay. So, Teresa, thank you very much. And this did come up. Go ahead, Paul.
There was a proposal last year that Matt Norman, who's the city clerk of Manchester and I believe a Republican, proposed that we have a trial of electronic poll books. And these poll books wouldn't be attached to the Internet at all, so there's no concerns about hacking them. But what they would do is in each town you would have the voter list so that when you wouldn't have to split it up at different tables by the alphabet, so you wouldn't have long lines at places. So it would help there. It would also help in Manchester. It would eliminate, I think they spend 2 months after elections updating the voting rules. This would all do it automatically. And you could also do what the caller called, which is cross-check, take people when they move off other towns. And right
how does
now,
that happen now? I mean, if I live in Concord now, let's say I move to Newmarket, I register in Newmarket, does that automatically kick me off in Concord?
No.
I'm not sure. There's different levels at which at some places, some ways it does happen. But I do know from state to state, we don't make voters take themselves off and we don't help them take themselves off except for like six New England states. We talk to each other. We should be talking to the whole country and sharing this information because right now people are registered in multiple states. My daughter still gets things from New Hampshire. She's lived in Vermont for 10 years.
Where does she vote?
She votes in Vermont. And
so that sounds
you'll
like
be happy to know when she first went there to go. As a student, I told her that that's where I asked her what her thoughts were about where she was going to stay. And she said she was going to stay in Vermont. And I told her she needed to vote in Vermont.
But what you're describing, Paul, sounds like it would provide the opportunity for fraud. If nobody's pushing me to get off of Concord's rolls and, you know, not vote in Newmarket and Concord, what you just described sounds like people could vote in multiple states.
There's a voter, I'm trying to think the name of it, I think it's called ElectionNet at the Secretary of State's office that would pick that up when the things are finally pulled in. But it doesn't necessarily, and again, I'm not real clear on this, I don't think it resolves the problem of whether you're registered in multiple places.
Not ahead of time.
Yeah.
That'd be trued up afterwards.
I mean, I think, yeah, you'll get caught. So the fact that nobody's getting caught, I think, means it probably isn't happened. But we should just get these people off the rolls, purge them if they've moved.
All right. Let's take another call. And this is Pat in North Conway. Go ahead, Pat. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Fascinating topic. Let me just throw in a couple other suggestions. Permanent absentee voting. Now you have to beg to get an absentee ballot. If you were locked in permanent, you know, that would help increase voting. Look at early voting, maybe the Sunday or Saturday before a regular polling day. Look at mail voting. Washington and Oregon do it entirely as states. And to have this one representative say that he was proud that they hadn't looked at the voting laws in 35 years, that's locked in a time warp. That's not helping anybody. We really need to bring things into modern society, and being proud of having had it the same way for the last 35 years isn't working.
Early voting, Pat, I know that was a big deal in several other states. How early is too early? I'm just curious what you think.
10 days out.
10 days out.
Saturday or Sunday beforehand.
You know, let's talk about some of these real quick, gentlemen, and I can't believe we only have about less than 2 minutes left, but to you first, Brian Gould, what do you think about permanent absentee ballots? You know, so then folks just never have to worry about it. I have heard that in some states it's a lot easier to get an absentee than it used to be.
That may be, but I think Paul and I both saw during one of our recent recounts how problematic absentee ballots can be. So, for example, we saw, I don't know, Paul, 30, 40 in one race where the election officials had rejected a ballot because in the opinion of the elected the officials, the signatures didn't match on the request form and on the affidavit. I just think that that creates opportunities for votes to be lost that people need to appreciate. What needs to happen here is something far more targeted, because all of the policies that we've been talking about today depend on the legitimacy of our elections for their validity. And I don't think we can be careless about who's qualified to vote. I think we have to be very, very intentional about it. And I think it's going to require some subtlety and some targeted legislation. Wholesale changes won't work under the law, under our Constitution, under federal law. But there are ways to improve it.
Okay. Go ahead, Paul. What do you think about some of these proposals that our caller puts forward, Pat?
Permanent
absentee, early voting, mail-in voting?
I agree with Brian in terms of the absentee voting. I think, first of all, if anybody's concerned about voter fraud, it almost never happens in in-person voting, but it does happen in absentee voting. Secondly, Brian, as Brian said, a lot of absentee ballots don't get counted. I think in 2004 there were 4,000 or 5,000 ballots in the state that weren't counted. That's a lot of votes. I would much rather see early voting and making it easier for people, give them weekend voting or something, or so that it's easier for people to go there. But I would like to see voters, you know, unless they're disabled, they have some other reason that they can't get there, I'd like to see them physically go to the polls and or go to the town clerk's office and do it in person.
All right. Well, we will revisit this issue because there was so much listener interest. And I want to let everybody know, if you didn't get on the air, we always continue our conversation online on Facebook at nhpr.org. And Brian Gould, Paul Toomey, we'll have you back. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.